after abortions, what happens to the bodies of the babies? Find out next on Gospel of Life. Hello, I'm Reverend Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome to our program. Many people ask me as I speak about abortion around the country, what happens to the bodies of the babies who are aborted? We have had a program here on our Gospel of Life series in which we spoke with Monica Miller, who actually retrieved the bodies of hundreds of aborted babies from dumpsters outside of abortion facilities and pathology labs, where those babies were simply deposited in plastic bags along with the rest of the garbage. In other instances, we have heard of abortionists simply flushing these babies down the toilet, and in many cases, the babies are incinerated. Today, I'm joined, as usual, by Janet Morana, our associate director, and we're going to speak with a guest over the phone from Colorado who was actually involved in the burial of the ashes of cremated babies who were aborted. Janet, good to be with you again.
Yes, Father. And, you know, there's an abortionist that's been operating for many, many years. We know he does late-term abortions. His name is Warren Hearn. Matter of fact, you've mentioned on this program before about the textbook he wrote about abortion.
Yes, Abortion Practice.
That's right. And at his, there is a Colorado state law that says if the remains of the product of abortion, as they put it, is identifiable human remains, they cannot be just discarded as medical waste. Mm-hmm. They must be then cremated or incinerated. Mm-hmm. And we're going to hear now from our guest, from Susan Lavelle. And she's the chairwoman of the Memorial Wall Project in the Sacred Heart of Mary Parish out in Boulder. And Susan has, I think, quite an astounding story to tell our viewers. So we welcome Susan Lavelle to our program.
Thank you.
Susan, what happened? How did this burial of these babies come about?
In 1996, in the fall of 96, our pastor was contacted by a local mortician who had just taken on a contract with Warren Hearn's Boulder Abortion Clinic to incinerate, cremate the remains of late-term abortions. He was told it would be tissue, and he said what had happened was his staff was traumatized by what they found because instead of just tissue, they found babies and parts of babies. So he came to our pastor asking him what he thought he should do about this. He was not even sure he should keep the contract. And at that time, our pastor, Father Andrew Kimberling, told him, you know, it's not illegal what he's doing. It still isn't, by the way. And, you know, could we at least give these babies the dignity of a proper burial? And we have a cemetery here at our church. So from that point on, for 2 years, we would go about every 2 or 2.5 months to the mortuary before they cremated the babies. Father would take one person with him. There were just a few of us who knew about it. It was quiet at that time. And I was one of those, and we would go and have a little service together with the babies before they were cremated. We never did see the babies, but the mortician would always report to us what he was seeing and finding. Then they would cremate and give us the ashes for burial.
Wow. So you would have these services there at the mortuary itself?
Yes, we did. The first 2 years, that's what we did.
The first 2 years. And how many babies each time that you went to do these services were being cremated?
At those burials, they never gave us any kind of a number report, although I can tell you, because I was there, the boxes would be stacked up probably 4 feet high and 6 feet long and covered with, you know, the white cloth for us. Afterwards, our burials, we started getting them again. It quit for a few years, and then we started getting them again in 2001. At that point, the mortician we were working with would report to me what he had numbers-wise, and most of the time it was 500 babies in each burial. Now, that was usually about every 6 months, and several of the burials, he told me, there were at least 500 babies, and many of them full-term.
This is it's just amazing. It really is.
You know, this really dispels the myth. You know, most Americans think that abortion occurs just in the first trimester. Oh, it's not really a baby and all that. I mean, by what Susan's telling us here, these are babies in the seventh and eighth month term pregnancy. I mean, whole babies that they're then cremating. It's amazing.
Now, tell us how then the story evolved from there.
Actually, we did the burial of for the 2 years we received the ashes with Father Andrew Kamberling. He and I then did the burial out privately again. He was really concerned about, we live in Boulder, he was worried about vandalism and a lot of problems with this if it became public. So we did the burial privately, and they are underneath in one large grave site underneath a large statue of the risen Christ with a plaque marking the site now. In 2000, we had a new pastor, Father Dorino De Lazar, and he allowed me to have a wall built where we could really make this public now, and people could place plaques on the wall remembering babies that were lost before birth, whether abortion, miscarriage, or stillborn. And that is right at the site of where these babies are buried. Then in 2001, the contract went back to another mortuary, but they knew of us, and they came to us and said, will you do the burials again? We said, absolutely. And we started doing burials about every 6 months. At that time, we were getting the reports of at least 500 in each burial.
And these were gradually becoming more and more public. Did members of the parish take part in these services?
Yes, from 2001 on, all of them were, we made sure that everyone in our parish knew about them. We'd have it for a week or two in the bulletin beforehand so that people could be here. And, of course, we'd call all the Respect Life groups and different churches in the area so they could send people if they were interested in being here. We do the burials following a regular Sunday Mass, so sometimes we would catch people by surprise, you know, that didn't know we were doing a burial. We would process out to the cemetery following the Mass, carrying the ashes, and do the burial right there around the same site where the original burial was done, each time in a different location. The first several times, Father Dorino said to me, you know, we don't need to traumatize people too much. We don't need to pour the ashes into the ground in front of them. Wait until everyone leaves and then bury them, which I would do. Then one Sunday he surprised me and turned and whispered and said, I want you to pour them out in front of everybody today. And that's when I think people were really impacted by this, because there were so many ashes. Sometimes, well, one time more than one container even. And it would take a while to pour them into the ground, and you would see little pieces of bone and stuff too. So it was, there wasn't a dry eye, in other words, every time people would see this.
You could see pieces of the baby's bones in the ashes.
Yes, if you were close enough, absolutely.
Wow, that is really, thanks be to God for, you know, pastors like the ones that you've been describing there at your parish, who have the wisdom to bring the people together and let them see face to face the reality of what abortion is. Now, these burials are not taking place currently. Tell us what happened that caused it to stop.
Well, actually, Father Dorino and I had both kind of really felt through prayer that our next burial was to be done. We were to contact the media so that people would know about this. It didn't. Yes, we were letting local people know, but it still wasn't making a big splash. A lot of people weren't hearing the story. So we knew that we were to do that. We both were in agreement on that. The interesting thing was, all of a sudden, we weren't getting the ashes, and I couldn't understand why, and I talked to the mortuary, and they said, well, we don't know why. All of a sudden, we got a phone call a week before the Roe v. Wade anniversary of 2005 last year, and which meant that our burial would be a week later, and it was on that anniversary.
Wow.
And we had two containers. They had somehow misplaced them at the mortuary. He said, I don't know how we didn't see them. We always get them to you right away. I really took that as a sign of God wanted it to happen at that time.
Yes.
We did take it to the media. It was not, I didn't know what to expect, and I was shocked at the response it got. It was heard around the world. We had people calling from the BBC. CNN picked it up, and from that point on, it went everywhere.
So it got a lot of media exposure, and again,
it did.
That's positive. That's positive because people, you don't have burial service for your appendix or tonsils. You have burial services for people. And so this makes it all the more real.
So now, Susan, when that made that big splash in the media, did anything happen? Like, did Warren Hearn then hear about these burials?
Absolutely, and he was furious. That's putting it mildly. That was the first he'd known about it, even though it had actually had come out in some of our local little papers. And I kind of always wondered if he had seen it, because one liberal little paper even had reported it in 2000. But he had not picked up on it, and he was outraged. So, of course, we're not receiving them now. They're not going to that mortuary. The reaction was anger on his part. We had a handful, I understand, about 8 people who protested our burial. I didn't see them. They were kept away from our site. But for the most part, there was a very positive reaction and response. I had more than 8 women, over a dozen probably, have called me and said, is it possible that you buried my baby? And I said, tell me, did Warren Hearn do your abortion? When was it? And all but one, I was able to say, yes, we have your baby here. And they were very grateful, thankful, and have asked to come out. And I've shown them exactly where their baby is buried.
Wow. Well, Susan, stay on the line. We're going to go for a little break, but we want to talk to you more about the reaction that you've gotten from people, both mothers of these babies and also people who have been moved in different ways by the publicity. So hang on. We'll be right back, brothers and sisters, after this break. Don't go away.
There's nothing wrong with your television set. You don't see anything because there's nothing there. Abortion, the most common surgery in America. Why don't we ever see what it looks like? A message from Priests for Life.
When I found out I was pregnant, I thought I would lose my job.
My boyfriend told me to choose between him and the baby.
I was already struggling to care for one child, so I had an abortion.
I had trouble conceiving again.
I tried to commit suicide.
I started to have nightmares.
You see, abortion didn't solve our problems.
It just created different ones.
That's why we are silent no more.
We found help in healing, and you can too. Call or go online today.
Welcome back. We're talking with Susan Lavelle from Boulder, Colorado, about the burial of aborted babies that were received from Warren Hearn's abortuary. The mortuary to which he sent these babies and where they were cremated contacted Sacred Heart of Mary Parish in Boulder, and burial services were arranged. Now, Susan, you've been talking with us about this, and the publicity that these burials generated, you were telling us before the break, actually led some women who thought some of these babies might be theirs to contact you. That must have been a very moving thing to be able to bring them to the gravesite, because as we know, one of the difficulties, and Janet, you know, working with women that have had abortions, the difficulty in healing is that there's no body there to grieve. The body of the baby has been taken away in a violent and brutal fashion. But now, if you can show them the place where these babies are buried, that helps the healing.
Yes, it does. It really does. Matter of fact, I know several women say that that's one of the things that grieves their heart the most, that they don't have a final resting place to go visit for their baby. Sometimes if there's a tree nearby their home, they'll just go and sit under that tree and look up to the heavens and pray to the Lord.
Yes.
And trusting their child to the Lord. So I can imagine, Susan getting these calls from these post-abortive women, what a healing experience that must have been to bring them out to this cemetery and see the final resting place of their child.
Yeah. Susan, what other kind of impact or fruit or testimony or reaction, positive or negative, did you see among the people who participated in these services or came to know about them?
I had several women who actually stepped forward and wanted to be interviewed by the press when we had this media explosion here. And they said they had never spoken publicly at all about their past abortion or abortions, and they felt very free to do that. So they found it to be very healing. I also had one woman who contacted me tearfully and said, "Is my baby there?" And when I got the details from her, I said, "Absolutely, your child was buried here in underneath the risen Christ." And she and her husband come out regularly, and she told me that when she heard that we were doing these burials, her reaction was, she said it was the first sense of peace she'd had in the 7 years since her abortion.
Wow.
Another woman contacted me just in the last couple of months. She had had an abortion, was married at the time, and her baby is also buried out here. And she said it destroyed her marriage very clearly. When she told me details, it did destroy her marriage. But she and her husband set a time with me, ex-husband, and came out and met me so that I could show them exactly where their baby was. And they put a plaque on the wall remembering their child. And when I left them, the two of them were sitting, holding each other and sobbing and, you know, at the site of where their own child was buried. So I think that this place is a place of healing, very much so. I think that's God's intention for it. If these women can be healed, Pope John Paul told us this. I think in Evangelium Vitae, he talks about if the women can find healing, they have the voice.
That's right.
That's right.
Abortion.
That's right.
Now, Susan, if people want to get more information about this memorial wall in the cemetery, do you have a website or something?
We do. It's memorial-wall.org. We also are linked to our website at Sacred Heart of Mary Church, too.
All right, great.
Well, please convey our gratitude to the priests who have been involved in this. They help make abortion real to all of our people.
Absolutely, and thank you for letting me tell this story so that more people can hear about it.
Well, we'll be back in contact with you and follow up with you. Of course, now the question is, what does Warren Hearn do with the hundreds and thousands of babies that he aborts? And that question brings us back to the question with which we started this program. What happens to the bodies? And, you know, people do ask that question because abortion in our society is treated as an abstraction. We're not led to think about the bodies by those that are promoting abortion. And, you know, we see in this story how Warren Hearn became so furious. You know, why would the man be so furious? Burying the babies is not telling him he has to stop aborting them. But of course, we know what's happening, that the burial humanizes these children and therefore puts Warren Hearn in the bad light that he deserves to be in, namely that what he is doing is actually taking the lives of human beings.
That's right. You know, it's exposing the injustice, and it's taking the mask off abortion. Warren Hearn would like us to keep talking about freedom of choice.
Right.
He likes to keep it masked in the choice word.
Yes.
But if you're burying something, you're not burying a choice. It's a baby that's been killed.
It's a real body.
And
right.
I invite our viewers to once again go to our website, gospeloflife.com/images. And you will see the remains of these babies before they went to this mortuary, other babies of similar gestation.
Right.
And this is what we're talking about. These are real children and of healthy mothers, of healthy babies through all 9 months of pregnancy. That's what this abortion law allows here in this country. And if anyone out there watching us right now thinks that you're pro-choice, this is what you're choosing. And you really, as a Christian, have to think about your conscience. And one day you're going to be accountable to the Lord Jesus Christ himself for taking a position of this so-called choice.
Well, as Christians and also just as decent human beings who realize that no matter what our religious background is violence, bloodshed is bloodshed, and it has to stop.
That's right.
So thanks, Janet. Thanks again, Susan. And thank you, brothers and sisters, for being with us on Gospel of Life. Take the information that you've heard today and spread it to others. Bring this information to your pastors, to your church congregations. Make links on your website to our website. Order the literature that we can provide you to become more familiar with what abortion is. Take those images of the aborted babies from our website and email them to your friends, to your email list, to people who aren't so sure where they stand. And let other people know about our program as well so that they can get educated, too, and inspired to work together to build a culture of life. Stay with us now because after these breaks, we will go to our action segment.
I want to be a fireman when I grow up.
I want to be a teacher.
I want to be president of the United States.
cure for cancer.
The choice to have an abortion alters the course of the future. Please remember, where there's life, there's hope. A message from Priests for Life.
Some candidates for public office claim that the government should not be involved in abortion. But the government got too involved in abortion the day it removed protection from children in the womb. The first purpose of government is to protect the lives of its people. No one who deliberately fails to do that is worthy of public office. This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life.
There's nothing wrong with your television set. You don't see anything because there's nothing there. Abortion, the most common surgery in America. Why don't we ever see what it looks like? A message from Priests for Life.
My friends, welcome to our action segment where Janet Morana, our associate director, and I discuss practical things you can do to advance the culture of life. And today, we're talking about what you can do in this important election year. Janet, what's the first thing we want to recommend?
Well, the very first thing is register to vote. I'm hoping most people that are watching us right now are registered, but maybe you've moved since the last election, so you have to make sure your registration is current. And then what about your immediate family? All your immediate relatives registered to vote, and then now we have to go widen the circle. Your church family, your Bible study group, your prayer group. Why not approach your pastor? Have a voter registration a couple of Sundays in a row, maybe to get a memento building. Make sure everyone in your congregation is registered to vote.
In fact, we've designated certain Sundays as National Voter Registration Sundays, and how to do that, as well as what those dates are found at gospeloflife.com/vote. So we want to recommend that very highly. Now, in some states, as you know, Janet, there's early voting.
That's right.
Now, we're talking here about two different things. One is obviously for people who are going to be out of their voting area on election day. You can get an absentee ballot. Or for those who are homebound or in nursing homes or away at college, make sure they get an absentee ballot so that they can vote in advance. But there's also early voting that people can take advantage of in certain states, even if you're not going to be away on election day. You can just vote early. And we want to strongly encourage people to do that because then it decreases the chances that something at the last minute is going to get in the way and keep you from voting, or maybe you just forget when election day rolls around.
Right. And then also research the candidates in your community that are running for office. Find out who the pro-life candidates are, and then consider going to their local office and volunteer for that candidate. I mean, we have to get the people that are out there in the grassroots, on the ground, helping to elect more pro-life people in every aspect of government. So maybe you have a pro-life, someone running to be mayor of your town that's running on the pro-life, you know, that's a pro-life person. You want to help him get elected. You have to look to see about if there's some important Senate races around the country. Look at the candidates and then go to their local office and volunteer to help. Literature distribution. There are all kinds of activities. You can volunteer to help stuff mailings for these candidates, because, you know, sometimes they just need those extra hands to get the word out.
Well, the literature distribution is very important. Going door to door, standing on the public sidewalks, giving out this material, standing in front of churches. As long as you're on the public sidewalk, you don't need anybody's permission to give out literature to the people coming and going from church. Now, as far as the churches go, sometimes the pastors will allow educational materials or even voters' guides to be distributed in church. Talk with the local pastor and see if he's willing to do that.
That's right. And very often, too, again, the campaign headquarters of these candidates will have the literature for you. Because people say, well, where do I get the literature? Well, it's from the campaign headquarters. And also, too, there are pro-life organizations around the country that specialize in assisting in voter guides. And they can go to those organizations where they will gladly send them voter guides to distribute on, like, especially the weekend right before Election Day. That's like this, what they call the 72-hour push. That's when we really need extra people to distribute those voter guides.
Well, of course, at Gospel of Life, we have pamphlets, too, that we're making available to churches. People can get that information, bulletin inserts, and homily materials for pastors to preach on political responsibility. Finally, the get-out-the-vote effort is so crucial. On Election Day or even before, if there's early voting in your state,
get people to the polls. Some people may need a ride. Some may need a babysitter. Some may just need a reminder. But one way or the other, in fact, we urge people to take the day off on Election Day. And this year, 2006, Election Day is the 7th of November. It's a Tuesday. Put in now for some vacation time, day off, and use that day getting on the phone with friends and like-minded people to get out and cast their votes for the pro-life candidates.
That's right. I always say, you know, use your Christmas card list, and that's the kind of people to go down that list and make sure they know about the candidates and get out and vote.
Well, thanks, Janet, and thank you, brothers and sisters. You know, in 2004, so many of you were motivated to work on the election because you saw the opportunity to change the Supreme Court. Well, the Supreme Court has changed, but it's going to change again. It's going to need to change in the right direction. And what happens with the Supreme Court next very much depends on the outcome of this year's election, especially for United States Senate seats. So let's be active, let's be informed, let's get out there and get the people who are already on board with us on the issues to get into those voting booths and cast their votes. It's the responsible thing to do as Christians. Every vote counts. Let's be active to advance the cause of life.
The decision to have an abortion not only affects that moment in your life.
Kristen Gordon.
It affects many precious moments to come.
I now pronounce you man and wife.
Please remember, where there's life, there's hope. A message from Priests for Life.
Political candidates think abortion has nothing to do with their job, but legal abortion means the government decides which lives are worthy of protection and which aren't. Do we really want to elect people who think they have that kind of power over life and death? Think about it. This is Father Frank Pavone, director of Priests for Life.
It's positive. I'm pregnant.
My boyfriend panicked,
and I was worried what my family would say.
I just didn't know what to do.
If you're facing an unplanned pregnancy, you have options. You don't have to be alone. Call 1-800-395-HELP. Our services are totally confidential and free. If you're pregnant, call now. There is help.
Friends, as we conclude our program, may I invite you to do four things. First of all, tell other people about Gospel of Life. Tell them when these programs air so that they can tune in and learn more about the pro-life movement. Secondly, we like to hear from you. On our website, gospeloflife.com, you can even send us your prayer requests, and our entire ministry team will be more than happy to lift up your concerns and intentions before the throne of God. Thirdly, we're eager and ready to come to your community, to preach in your churches, to gather with your pro-life groups, and to help inspire you in the pro-life cause. And finally, we ask you to donate so that we can keep these programs on the air. You can send your tax-deductible contributions to us at Gospel of Life Ministries. Again, go to our website, and thank you.